Good evening and welcome to the last sports takeover of 2018. Glad you're here with us. I'm Matt, and as always, Chris is with me. Let's get to it. We're going to start in the NFL tonight. What did we learn this past week, Chris?
We learned a lot of interesting things, some fortunate for teams, a lot of unfortunate things. I'm going to start in the NFC with the Chicago Bears and Dallas Cowboys. Both of those teams have shown to be legitimate contenders in the NFC. We've talked about it a lot this year, how there's been a lot of prolific offenses, but you're going to need defense come the playoffs. Well, the Cowboys and the Bears both have the defenses to back up their game. The Bears rank third in yards per game, Cowboys fourth. The Bears have the 10th pass defense, Cowboys ninth. Bears have the second rush defense, Cowboys third. And the Bears have the third scoring defense, Cowboys second. So essentially, both those teams have the exact same defenses, some alterations here and there, but essentially, their defenses are propelling them forward and allowing their offenses to take off, which has really propelled them to the tops of each of their divisions.
Yeah, so my biggest takeaway was the defense that I saw this week. And we've seen offense all season. We've talked about offense all season. But I think defense is going to be necessary for teams that may not have that offense, or ultimately to compete for a Super Bowl, you might have to have some defense. You talked about the Bears and the Cowboys. The Ravens are another one. They're averaging 18 points a game against entering their game against Kansas City, which they lost in overtime 24-27 against the best team in the AFC in one of the toughest buildings to play in the NFL. So I think that speaks to what kind of defense they had there.
Yeah, definitely. The Ravens, I knew, were a team that was going to have to rely on their defense, given that Joe Flacco has not been the most consistent of quarterbacks. We've seen the passing of the guard to Lamar Jackson. Now their offense is kind of taking over a little bit more, definitely more rush-oriented, but really it's that defense that holds them together. We've seen Kansas City put up 50 against the Rams, and they barely put up 27 against the Ravens. They had some late fourth quarter heroics and overtime heroics that actually got them the win. Ravens were in control a decent part of the game. We saw the Rams play the Bears and only score 6 points. The Rams, which is arguably the best offense in all of the NFL, one of the best offenses we've seen in years, and they can only muster up 6 points in primetime television against the Bears. That's not going to get the job done in the playoffs for them.
Right, and I think that's why the defense stood out so much to me, is because not only do you have the Ravens lose a close one to a tough team, you have the Bears shut down an offense that we saw put up 54 on the Chiefs earlier in the season. That's a really good team putting up a lot of points against another team that's supposed to be a top contender. And then this week, they don't even find a way to get in the end zone. So I thought that was huge. Looking at a couple teams now, more specifically than a certain side of the ball, the Steelers and the Vikings are in a very similar situation. The Steelers are 7-5-1. The Vikings are 6-6-1. Both teams that a few weeks ago you looked at as not a lock to get in, but well in control of their own destiny, and now you're looking at teams that are struggling to keep their position in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Vikings are a team, you said, 6-6-1. They have not beaten a team that is above 500. The Steelers, 7-5-1, have only beaten one team above 500, that being the Ravens, who they also lost to. So neither of those two teams are able to compete against the best of the best, which is when it comes down to the playoffs, you're going to need to compete against the best of the best. And seeing how those two teams can, it looks very bad for them going into the playoffs. The one thing the Vikings do have working for them, they are currently the sixth seed at 500. Below them, there's no team that's at or above 500, so the rest of the NFC is kind of not doing so hot this year, which allows for the Vikings maybe be able to slip in. But the Steelers have some tough matchups coming up against the Patriots and the Saints. The Ravens are right on the door. There's a lot of 7-6 teams, so it's not going to be as easy to get in the playoffs as it was a few weeks ago for those two teams.
Yeah, and I mean, Pittsburgh's got more teams behind them in the wild card, but they are at least leading their division. Minnesota doesn't really have a shot at their division with Chicago playing as well as they're playing. So some different things to look at there. Couple teams that are really in trouble in the playoffs, not just barely hanging on, but they've lost their hold. The Panthers and the Broncos are both sitting at 6-7. Carolina's lost 5 in a row. Denver's been hit with injuries. These are two teams that looked like they had some traction. Denver was winning some games there for a little bit. Carolina with a great start to the season, but now they're both out of the playoff picture, and they're trending the wrong way while other teams are trending the right way.
The one thing about Denver is I thought they looked really strong coming off the victory against the Steelers, but going into this past week, they lost their star receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, for the season, which kind of makes their offense have two threats between Sanders and Lindsey to kind of just one running back threat, which is easy to neutralize. They will drop the game to the 49ers, which are a team that you should not be losing to whenever there are playoff implications at hand. They are in a tough division behind the Chargers and Chiefs, not really any good way to get above them, so their playoff hopes are kind of down. The The Panthers already don't have an opportunity to win their division. The Saints already clinched it. And they were a team that was sitting at 6-2 that they must have heard me saying how much I like them and how I thought they were a good team, because they have now dropped 5 in a row since then. I picked them all 5 weeks too. But moving past that, they don't have it together for whatever reason. McCaffrey's putting up a good season. The defense just doesn't seem to be making the key stops when they need to. And when you're in a division with the Saints and you have 2 of 3 next games against the Saints, it's really hard for the Panthers to be able to muster up any kind of playoff hopes right now.
Yeah, and those are teams going the wrong way, but some teams going the right way. You touched on Dallas and their defense. Seattle's another one that has surprised me this year. Both of these teams are sitting at 8-5. Dallas leading their division with no one really as a clear favorite to even make a move to try to catch them. And Seattle sitting there at the 5 seed, just knocking off Minnesota the other night, who's a team that was right behind them. That's a game you want to take care of, and they did. And we talked about who's behind the Vikings. Well, they're even farther behind the Seahawks, which is great for Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the season, I didn't think that Seattle would be above 500. I would have said 5 or 6 wins would have been a good plateau for them. However, this year they have shown they are a very strong team. They sit at 8-5, 5th place, can't win the division, but they pretty much have the wild card locked up with that defeat over Minnesota. Their 5 losses have been 2 to the Rams, 1 to the Chargers, 1 to the Bears, and 1 to the Broncos. So out of those 5 losses, only one of those has been to a team that's under 500. So essentially, Seattle is losing the games you would expect them to lose, and they're winning some important ones. They beat Dallas earlier in the season. They are a team that is led by Russell Wilson, a great rush offense as well. Definitely a surprise for me. Once again, don't have any possibility to win the division, seeing how the Rams already clinched. But sitting at the 5th wild card, they are most likely going to play the Bears or Cowboys. So I wouldn't put my money on Seattle losing easily in the first round. They seem to be a very strong team right now.
Yeah, they do. Much stronger than I thought they would be. Some interesting stuff to look at here in the NFL as we have 3 weeks to go before these playoff spots are final. College football now, some awards were handed out here in the past week. Lots of different awards, lots of different winners. Chris, who are the biggest winners in college football?
Well, the biggest college football award is the Heisman Memorial Trophy, and I would have to say that Kyler Murray, seeing how he won the trophy, is the biggest winner. It's very interesting the dynamic between Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa. The two of them were thought to be the two in the middle of the race for the Heisman. There was no clear favorite this year, which has been a few years since there hasn't been a clear favorite going into the ceremony. It really could have gone either way. Tua was able to win the Maxwell and Walter Camp Awards for Best Offensive Player. That's voted by different committees. That's why there's two different awards for the same type of thing. And Kyler Murray actually won the Best Quarterback Award, Davey O'Brien, which is also interesting that Tua was able to win 2 awards for being the best offensive player without being voted as the best quarterback, and Murray was able to win the best quarterback award and the Heisman. I feel like it's very interesting that the two of them split those awards. You could really have had it go either way. The performance late in the season by Kyler Murray was really what pushed him ahead. Some other notable awards, Jonathan Taylor, running back from Wisconsin, won the Doak Walker. He was talked about in the Heisman race, didn't end up being a finalist, but definitely had a strong campaign. Josh Allen, linebacker from Kentucky, was able to win the Bednarik and the Nagurski Award for Best Defensive Player. But once again, interesting situation where he did not win the Best Linebacker Award, where Devin White from LSU won the Best Linebacker. So kind of a parallel between him and Kyler Murray there, but definitely some strong candidates right there.
Yeah, so first of all, let me just say that college football can't make anything easy. We've got 3 or 4 polls to determine what ranks the teams. We've got 1 million bowl games because we can't decide who should be in what bowl game. And now we've got 3 awards for every single thing that they want to vote on. It's way over the top, but you're right. It was interesting to see Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa split these awards. It was kind of funny because when I pulled up the awards and it had a history of the winners, and a lot of the ones that were split between them, Baker Mayfield ran the table on last year. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny to see. Last year it was one quarterback, hands down, top of college football, I guess, and he took all those awards, and this year it was so split between these two great players that, like you said, they went 2-2. Josh Allen defensively took a lot of the awards, not the linebacker of the year, which, as you pointed out, was very strange, but he was a big winner. AP All-Americans, Kyler Murray edged out Tua in that category. I believe there were some other rankings because, once again, we can't just have one set of All-Americans. It has to come from 5 different sources. So some other committees voted Tua over Kyler. But in the AP, first team All-Americans, it was Kyler Murray. And Alabama led with 4 players on that first team All-American. Again, that's just the AP All-Americans. I think you have some numbers on some different groups.
Yeah, so there are about 5, 6, 7. I don't know. There's just a lot of various
Too many.
Yeah, way too many,
too many
different people that can rank them. There, you got the AP, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, CBS, etc., you name it. I found a list that compiled all of them and made a cohesive All-American list. No necessarily specification between first, second team whatsoever. So I looked specifically at the College Football Playoff. Alabama has 6 players on their team that were All-Americans. Clemson has 5. Notre Dame has 3. And Oklahoma has 4, which I believe all of those teams. Ohio State had a few, too. I think 3 or 4. I didn't write them down because they aren't in the playoff. But still, the teams that you'd expect to have the best players on in the playoff ended up doing so. Alabama coming away with 6 is no surprise to me. I did see, though, that there was, once again, a pretty even split between Kyler Murray and Tua. While he was included, they were both included on most of them. Sometimes there's variations between who was on the first team, who was on the second team. Both these guys are excellent athletes. It's hard to pick between them. I don't think there's any issue picking one over the other. They are both excellent in what they do each. I think the fact that Tua just is on Alabama kind of diminishes him a little bit because Kyler Murray is Oklahoma's offense, whereas Tua kind of has the rest of Alabama around him. But the fact that both these guys are on so many All-American lists just shows how strong they are.
Yeah, I agree. So the awards, nice, fun, but now it's the big stuff, Chris.
Yes, it is.
We've talked about the College Football Playoff all year. We can finally talk about what it's actually going to be. So that's those games are going to be December 29th, number 1 Alabama versus number 4 Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, number 2 Clemson versus number 3 Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl. Let's start with Alabama and Oklahoma. Give me some thoughts on that game. Not winners. We're going to pick our winners later. Just some thoughts on the game right now.
All right, so I looked up the stats for both Alabama and Oklahoma to see how their offenses and defenses compare. Both of them have fantastic offenses. Alabama's ranked 7th in yards per game, Oklahoma 1st. Alabama's 2nd in points per game, Oklahoma 1st once again. Alabama's 7th in passing, Oklahoma 8th, and Alabama's 37th in rush, and Oklahoma's 11th in rush. So both of these teams have phenomenal offenses. Oklahoma does not rank outside the top 11 in any. Alabama's in the top 10 all except for rushing, but seeing how they put up points with their defense itself and with Tua, it doesn't make that much of a difference. The defense, though, is definitely where you can see a decisive line drawn between these teams. Alabama ranks in the top 20 in each of yards per game, points per game, pass, and rush defenses, with being 4th in points per game, the best of those. Oklahoma, on the other hand, does not rank inside the top 50 in any of these. Their best is 53rd in rush defense. They have 108th in yards per game, 96th in points per game, and out of all 129 college football teams, they rank 128th in pass defense. Now, I understand the Big 12 is definitely a prolific conference with a lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of scoring, but to rank 128th out of 129 schools, that's going to be really difficult when you go up against the 7th best pass offense.
It is going to be very difficult. ESPN's Power Football Index gave Alabama a 73.3% chance to win this game. You talked about the difference in the defense, which is staggering. Points per game is 14.8 for Alabama. Oklahoma gets up 32.4 on average. Offensively, both very good. The biggest difference on offense is rushing. And we've talked about that with Tua and Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is much more of a dual threat. He can run the ball, he can throw the ball, and that shows in the offensive numbers for the team. Oklahoma averages about 50 yards more per game on the ground than Alabama does. Then you talked about Oklahoma's pass defense. Obviously, Alabama throws the ball more, or at least they do it more successfully than they run the ball. That could be an interesting matchup to watch. But the defense is going to be the big thing. Oklahoma is going to have to find a way to keep Alabama's points down. The one thing is, if they get into a shootout, that's certainly a game Oklahoma can play.
Right, but the problem is Alabama has not been known for getting the shootouts. They gave up 28 to Georgia in the SEC championship game, which is a lot, I would say, by their standards. They scored 35. But most of the time this year, they've played ranked opponents. They played LSU. They didn't give up any points. So Oklahoma definitely has a tough task ahead of them. But the dual threat of Kyler Murray, I think, is the only way that Oklahoma is going to be able to win the game. They're going to give up points. They're going to give up a lot of points, a lot of yards. It's a set, established fact. There's no way that the defense is going to turn it on overnight. It's just not going to happen. But if Kyler Murray can manage to put up 400 yards passing, 100 yards rushing or something, I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma was able to sneak through Alabama, but it's going to be very difficult for them.
It's going to be very difficult. It's going to be a very interesting matchup to see that Oklahoma offense against that Alabama defense. Something is going to have to give. The other matchup, Clemson and Notre Dame, this one's interesting. A pair of undefeated teams. Clemson has a 71.4% chance to win this one. Notre Dame did not play a title game, which is an interesting level to this. It gives them an extra week off. Granted, both teams have had a significant amount of time off, at least compared to what they're used to. But it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be interesting to see if Notre Dame's extra week off comes into play at all, if they'll be a little bit fresher or not. Clemson didn't play the toughest of title games against Pitt. That one was pretty one-sided. But nevertheless, they played, and Notre Dame did not. Points per game, Clemson edges out Notre Dame 45-33. Not super close in that category. Points against is a little bit closer, but Clemson again takes that one. 13.7, they give up a game. Notre Dame 17.3. Statistically, Clemson edges out Notre Dame in pretty much every category.
Yeah, so Clemson, their defense has been heralded as, especially their defensive line, as potentially all four members being drafted in the NFL, first, second, third round. They have a stout defensive line. They definitely can contain the run. They have the third best rush defense in all of college football, fourth in yards per game, second in points per game, 18th in passing, which that's not bad at all either. Just compared to the rest, it makes them kind of a little bit lower. Notre Dame, they're good. Just they're right behind Clemson, though. 21st yards per game, 9th in points per game, 36th in pass defense, 33rd in rush defense. A little bit behind. Offensive side, pretty much the same thing. Clemson is 5th in yards per game, Notre Dame's 18th. Clemson is 5th in points per game, Notre Dame's 34th. Clemson is 29th in pass offense, Notre Dame 31st. And Clemson is 10th in rush offense, Notre Dame's 49th. So while these two teams are both undefeated, very similar, Clemson just seems to have the edge on Notre Dame in so many different categories. I really find this game has not been talked that much about, mostly because there's no fantastic quarterbacks in either squad that are making ESPN headlines or anything like Kyler and Tua are. But this game is still a game between undefeateds, the only game that we're going to have between undefeateds in all of the bowl season. And I don't think that we can overlook this game. Both these teams have a lot to play for being undefeated. Notre Dame, you mentioned what the extra week might give them an extra week to be fresh. Well, what could also give them an extra week to be rusty?
Very true.
They've had a longer break than Clemson has. I mean, it'll be over a month since they will have played a game when they play December 29th. Clemson got a little bit luckier playing against Pitt, which was, if anything, just a tune-up game, seeing how Pitt didn't put up much of competition against them. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic of how long the rest period will affect those two.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's going to have a huge play a huge role in this game. And it is interesting. It is being overlooked a little bit because there isn't that one matchup that everybody wants to see. It's not Heisman candidate against Heisman candidate. The interesting thing, I think, with these statistics is that Notre Dame, they beat Michigan early on, but other than that, it was kind of a slow start. Some close games against some teams that maybe they shouldn't have been so close. They kind of turned it on as the season progressed. So maybe these numbers are not quite indicative of how they've been playing recently. Now, like you said, that at the time off, could they be rusty? Sure. But I do think maybe these numbers could be just a tad bit misleading, but that's really all it has to be. And then they make up that difference and they're statistically even with Clemson. So I think it'll be interesting. It's always interesting when you see teams play such different schedules in college football. They're both undefeated. They're both really good football teams. But we haven't necessarily seen a parallel in who they've played. So I'm excited to see these two play head-to-head.
Yeah, definitely. This game might be a closer game than the Alabama-Oklahoma game. That one can kind of get lopsided one way or another. This game, while Clemson does have the edge, there's not a ton that separates these two teams. They play pretty similar schedules. While Notre Dame's an independent, they still do have an ACC obligation. They have to play so many teams. So we've seen them play common opponents. Clearly, both of them have handled them all in the same manner, seeing how they've won every game. Notre Dame having the game over Michigan early in the season, where Michigan was not thought to be a strong team, ended up being close to making the college football playoff, shows that Notre Dame has the resilience. Clemson, they've played an undefeated team earlier in the season. They played NC State middle of the year. I unfortunately picked NC State in that game that they got rolled over by Clemson. So neither have had two tremendously difficult of tests, but both of them have definitely handled their competition. It's exciting to see where it goes from here.
I agree.
All right, now we're going to take a quick break, but coming up we have some MLS, NHL, and 2018 review. Stay tuned. We're at 19 minutes, by the way.
Okay.
So we're like four off of real time.
Okay. What are the odds that's working now?
No.
So my right ear, like the headphones, it kept making like this buzzing noise depending on how loud you were talking, or either one of us was talking. But then at some point it stopped.
Is it working now?
It was, yeah.
Okay, I'm not gonna touch it then.
So odds are it'll go out on me again and I'll have to deal with it for the rest of the time, but it did come back there at the end. There was one point when we were talking about the awards, and all of a sudden it clicked back on real quick and I was like, whoa, and then it went away again. I was like, ah, man.
Yeah, I have no idea how to do anything with this.
Okay.
I can drag it around. I can even close the window.
I don't think you can do that. All right, let's... Okay, I have that one. That's... Bengals or Ravens? We're going back ways here. Bengals or Ravens? The Ravens won that game.
Yep.
Vikings or Bears? Bears won that game. Chiefs and Rams? Rams, that's 2-1. Notre Dame won, that's 3-1. UCF, that's 3-2. Lightning at Predators?
Predators won.
4-2.
Predators took both.
Warriors, okay, so I was 4-3 that week.
Still got 55.
Okay. Chargers at Steelers, 0-1. Redskins at Eagles.
Eagles,
okay. 1-1. Oklahoma won, that's 2-1. Boise State lost, that's 2-2. Alabama's 3-2. Clippers at Kings?
The King, I love Clippers won.
3-3. We got 4-3 again.
All right, you'll do the rest next because we got 20 seconds.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. MLS is what we're going to move into next. Once again, we have the final for you. The Cup just wrapped up. Atlanta United 2, Portland Timbers 0. Chris, your thoughts on the final in the MLS?
Well, Atlanta was the 2 seed. Portland was the 5 seed. Not that surprising of a result. Atlanta definitely had a strong campaign in the MLS playoffs. Their MLS MVP of the season, Joseph Martinez, plays for Atlanta. He had the first goal, which ended up being the game-winning goal of the game. Definitely good atmosphere in Atlanta. The attendance they had there, 73,019, set an MLS record, MLS Cup record. It beat the previous record by 11,703. Atlanta has been craving sports as the first professional sports team in Atlanta to win a major championship since 1995 when the Atlanta Braves won. So they've had a 23-year drought. Definitely a city that likes their sports, shows it by their attendance with the MLS final, and they definitely have a reason to rejoice.
Yeah, Atlanta was awesome, just in general. I'll get to that in a second. Talking about Joseph Martinez, he had the goal. He also had an assist on the second goal, so he certainly left his mark on that game. Biggest surprises of the postseason for me, Atlanta and the New York Red Bulls. That game where Atlanta just stumped the Red Bulls, I thought was incredible. And, I mean, here they are, the champions, so certainly they kind of foreshadowed where they were going with that win and really proved a point there. The Timbers had a fantastic playoff run, like you said, the 5 seed. I still believe that week that they had off really killed the momentum that they had going. I'm not saying that they would have won this necessarily, but I think it may have been a different story for the Timbers had they been able to keep that momentum rolling straight through. But yeah, Atlanta was just unreal. They've only had a soccer team for 2 years. This is only the second year that this team's even been in the MLS. So that makes this, the level of competition of the team is even more impressive when you look at that. But the crowd that they had, like you said, the biggest in league history, was just incredible. And there was 1.5 million TV viewers on Fox, best ratings since the 1997 MLS Cup Final.
It's good for MLS.
That's great for MLS and great for Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely. Good for them. Good season. You said Portland kind of lost momentum. I would agree with that. But the fact that they were the 5 seed just had to go on the road so much, wore down the guys. I don't think they can be sad about losing the final coming into the playoffs as the 5 seed. Had some upsets along the way, took off number 1 Sporting KC in the West, definitely a good postseason for them. Something to look forward to. But Atlanta, that win you said over New York really propelled them forward, foreshadowed how good their offense was, how dominant they were. Congratulations to Atlanta on winning the MLS Cup.
Moving right along, we'll get to the NHL now. We've had some time to kind of see which direction teams were going in and digest what we've seen. So we're going to talk about the NHL favorites here and which contender is at the top in our minds. So the standings right now, Tampa Bay is very top of the league. They've played 32 games. They have 49 points. Behind them is Toronto, 31 games, 43 points, followed by Nashville, 31 games, 41 points. Winnipeg, Calgary, and Buffalo all have 40 points. That's in 30 games for the Jets and in 31 games for the Flames and the Sabres. So, Chris, which contender do you think is at the top?
Well, it's really hard to argue against Tampa Bay. They are a strong team. They've been a strong team for each of the past several seasons. They currently lead the league by 6 points. They're the next closest team. Their goal differential, they have a plus 39 goal differential. That's just insane to me. That
blows everyone out of the water.
Absolutely. The next closest team is a plus 28, so they have 11 better goal differential than the next closest team they have. They've been doing a lot of this recently without their starting goalie, Andrei Vasilevskiy, too. Last year, he was a Vezina finalist, didn't end up winning, but finished in the top three, had a very strong campaign. He's been injured now for a few weeks. Louis Domingue has stepped in their backup, done a remarkable job. Vasilevskiy is coming back this week. I don't see any reason why Tampa Bay is not the clear-cut favorite right now. Steven Stamkos has been turning on. Braden Point is having a career season as well. They just have all the right buttons clicking at all the right time. It's really hard to go against Tampa.
It really is hard to go against Tampa. And Tampa is a team that I've liked for a long time. I called them making the 2015 Stanley Cup Final because I kind of recognized what they had going on. And they got there. They got close in 2016. They've been a competitive team, you know, ever since. Yeah, it's just really hard to argue against Tampa Bay. Toronto's having a heck of a season. Nashville was the President's Trophy winner last time with the best record in the regular season. They're right there as well. There's some interesting individual performances that should be mentioned as well. Mikko Rantanen for the Colorado Avalanche has 52 points.
He's coming out of nowhere.
52 points. That's an incredible pace that he's on. His teammate Nathan MacKinnon is right behind him at 47. That makes Colorado scary, but at the same time, I have a hard time putting Colorado in this conversation just because if either of those two guys drop off or anyone else on the team drops off from their current production that's remarkable, I don't know where that team goes if they're already not at the top. Nikita Kucherov for Tampa Bay, 45 points, so he's taking care of business for that team. Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers are surging. McDavid has 43 points. The Oilers have won 7 of their last 10. Braden Point for Tampa Bay is also at the top. He's got 41 points. So Tampa's got some key contributors there as well. And Mitch Marner for Toronto also has 41 points. So there's a lot of individual performances. I'm not sure that some of those performances make a case for their team as much as it may hurt them. Like I said, if that production drops off. But I'm with you. I have a tough time saying it's not Tampa. They've got two guys in the top 5 in points. They're in first place in the league by a decent margin, not a huge margin, but by a decent margin. I think it's Tampa.
Yeah, definitely hard to argue against Tampa. The West, you talked about Nashville. They were the President's Trophy winner last year, currently leading the West. They have the best goals against. They've only given up 78 goals. That's pretty good, too, whenever you have the high-flying offenses like Colorado out in the West. You mentioned Mika Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon, two linemates in Colorado. With their third linemate, Gabriel Landeskog, has 38 points. So you have 52, 47, and 38 between the top three. That's remarkable. The three of them are combined for a plus 56. Also fantastic. But like you said, though, if these guys stop contributing at any point, there's not really that much depth below them. They have been the backbone of their team. I guess if they have any sort of issue, they'd probably split that line up, try to get the other lines going a bit. But for now, that line's working. However, it is difficult to see a situation where they will not get into a drought at some time because all the good teams get into small droughts here and there where your players might not put up any goals for a 3-4 game period. Might be a little rough to watch the fan, rough to watch the coach, see some line shiftings around. Right now, that line is working. You mentioned Edmonton. They're 7 out of their last 10 games they have earned wins in. That's all due to Ken Hitchcock. Ironically enough, the guy that was bounced around between St. Louis and Dallas, retired out of Dallas, took a special advisor position with Edmonton. Well, Todd McClellan was not leading Edmonton down the right direction. Hitchcock said, all right, time for me to step in. Here's my two-way system. It's paid off for them, too. And interestingly enough, he has gone away from Cam Talbot, who was the goalie that propelled him forward 2 years ago in the playoffs, and turned to KHL import Mikko Koskinen. Not a household name. He's played one other season 7 years ago, in the NHL. So he's definitely not been here in a while, not going to be known by many. 14-10-3, not a super impressive record. But what I like about him, he has a .927 save percentage, 2.2 goals against. So I would attribute some of those 10 losses probably to the lack of scoring from Edmonton before Ken Hitchcock took over. Now that he's in command, he's started Koskinen in 6 of 10 games. He's definitely been the guy. He's shown he's very strong. He has 6 wins and no losses at home. He has definitely propelled Edmonton down from the bottom of the league up into the wild card spot they currently sit in. It's very good for Edmonton. Kind of scary for Colorado. And Nashville's pretty much right where you expect them.
Yeah, Nashville is right where you expect them. Winnipeg and Calgary, I think, are the other two in that conference that I really like where they're at. Calgary's on fire recently, no pun intended.
Is that a flame joke?
Yeah. But they've been very good. Winnipeg's been very good. Those are two teams that have a lot of youth, a lot of talent, a lot of scoring potential. And the Predators, of course, do as well, but their defense is fantastic. And we've seen their defense get them, like I said, to a President's Trophy last year, to the Stanley Cup Final the year before. So those are the three teams I like in the West right now. Edmonton's on the surge. If they can play like they did 2 years ago, that's a team that I think is very scary, especially with Connor McDavid. But I think I need to see more than just a hot streak from them. In Colorado, like I said, like we both said, if that production drops off from that top line, I don't know where they're going to go. They might be okay, they might not be, but we'll see. In the East, we said Tampa Bay. I like Toronto as well. Washington's the other team that I like right now. They're not at the very top of the standings, but they're the next closest team. And they're definitely a team that I don't want to say I trust, but I mean they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. If there's any team right now towards the top of the East that isn't Tampa Bay or Toronto, it's going to make some noise, I think it's them. Buffalo, I'm impressed with Buffalo, but I am not ready to call them a cup contender.
No.
They strike me as a team that will get in, maybe make some noise in an early round, but that needs a little bit of experience before I'm going to call them a cup contender. So that's the reason I kind of skip over Buffalo a little bit. Boston's kind of up there, but after that, it's just kind of a mess of Eastern Conference teams in the teens in the league rankings, like somewhere in the 15 to 19 range, which is a big jumble of Eastern Conference teams. So I don't know how to pick one out of there. If I was going to, I would say Pittsburgh. Just not because of how they're playing. They still need to put some things together. But Pittsburgh and San Jose both, for me, are teams that aren't playing to their potential, I don't think. But then if they do, they immediately become threats. Pittsburgh with the scoring offense, San Jose with the scoring defense. The speed that they have, the talent that they have, that both of these teams have, they're not in the standings where you would expect them to be. They're not playing at the level you would expect them to be. But if they start, watch out.
Yeah, Pittsburgh and San Jose are definitely two teams most people probably would have said, yeah, they'll easily make the playoffs going into the season. You know, there's not really that many doubts. A lot of good scoring, a lot of retained pieces from teams in the past that have done well. But they have both underperformed extremely. Erik Karlsson, he was the big trade in the offseason going from the Ottawa Senators to the San Jose Sharks. He has not done as much as people would have hoped. I mean, he's not having a terrible year, but he's not putting up Erik Karlsson-type numbers.
Right.
Especially when you have a guy in Ottawa like Thomas Chabot that is doing everything that Karlsson was doing. So you need him to get going for San Jose to do better. On the flip side, for the Penguins, they've had definitely some inconsistencies, a lot at goaltending. We've seen Matt Murray being injured and playing shakily when he's not been injured. Casey Smith has been the starter now that Murray's been injured, but still he's been back and forth between him and Murray. It's harder to get consistencies there. So if you can string together a consecutive set of games where you definitely know who your starter is a week ahead of time, it'll improve the game. Defense has been a little bit lacking at times too, but definitely a team that can make noise. I see Washington and I see Calgary as two teams that are mirrors of each other in opposite conferences. So the best teams in the Eastern Conference come out of the Atlantic Division. We have Tampa Bay, Toronto, Buffalo, Boston, and then we threw Washington in there. But Washington doesn't really have that much competition. Yeah, you know, there's teams right below them in the division. But still, in the grand scheme of the Eastern Conference, I don't think there are teams in the Metropolitan that are going to challenge Washington. Pittsburgh, yes, but not currently. They do not. Same goes in the Pacific for Calgary. They currently lead that division, whereas the Central, you have teams like Nashville, Winnipeg, Colorado, all on the outside looking in, whereas Calgary is kind of sitting comfortably in their division. San Jose, a team, once again, that could make noise, but however, considering how they've played now, it's definitely Calgary's division to lose. Them and Washington definitely have the pieces moving forward to do well.
It's a very interesting take on that, and I like that comparison. Two very similar teams, if you look at it that way. The biggest difference between them is Washington proved themselves last year, a little bit of an older team. Calgary's kind of on the rise as a younger team. still something to prove. Both sitting in a decent spot right now. Interesting to see where the NHL will be when we come back in a month. I don't know how similar it'll look, but certainly some teams here that are in a good position. So as I said at the beginning of the show, this is our last show of 2018. We're going on break, and the year's almost over anyway. So we thought it would be fitting to take a look back at 2018, some of the best moments. Before we get to the best moments, I have to throw in some of the best of the worst. Obviously, there's sports moments throughout the entire year that everybody loves and everybody will remember for a lifetime. There are also some bad ones that people will remember and that the people that put those on for us would wish that we didn't. NBA All-Star Weekend, National Anthem by Fergie. I don't know if she forgot to sing, how to sing, but if you haven't seen it, look it up. I'm sure you have seen it because it's just not good. Players laughing on the court as she's singing. It was just bad. One of the best bad moments of the year. J.R. Smith is another one for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Game one of the NBA Finals. Game was tied 107-107, and he was dribbling out the clock as if they were winning. They went to overtime, and they lost. Horrible way to start the finals. Horrible awareness. J.R. Smith, not going to be praising Cleveland for that one. And Vontae Davis, cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, or he was until halftime of week two when he spontaneously retired in the locker room after a week one thrashing and a week two deficit at halftime. Never seen anything like that. Never heard of anything like that. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that again. Those are three moments for me that just are worth remembering for all the wrong reasons.
So you said those were the best or the worst. Well, in my opinion, the word best means something that's good, something that brings happiness, and all three of those brought a smile to my face. So I'm really glad you included those. Please look up Fergie if you have not seen her sing the national anthem. I sing is a very strong word to use. Perform, I guess, would be the better word for it.
I guess.
It was a great moment. I had forgotten about it. It feels like forever ago. I'm sure she wishes it never happened as well, but definitely something that you need to look up. I went a little more positively, kind of looked at sports in general, seeing what kind of good things we saw from sports this year. We saw Philadelphia Eagles win their first Super Bowl in team history. Washington Capitals won their first Stanley Cup in team history. Atlanta United won their first MLS Cup in team history. Joey Logano won his first Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series championship. So a lot of firsts this year, but then also a lot of consistencies. The Warriors dynasty has continued in the NBA, third title in four seasons. We did see LeBron move away from Cleveland for the last time. He just couldn't take what JR did was just too much. Just sent him away. But yeah, the Warriors dynasty has been continuing to flourish. France has won their second World Cup in country history, first in 20 years. Red Sox won their fourth World Series in 14 years. And a little bit of a different note, we have seen Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi win the Ballon d'Or, which is the best male soccer player. Each of them two have split it between the last 10 years, going back and forth. Well, this year we saw Luka Modric from Croatia take away the award. So he broke the decade-long reign of Ronaldo and Messi. Definitely a huge step forward for him.
Yeah, so I kind of focus a little bit more on individual. I do have a couple team things to look at here before we go that way. The U.S. men's curling team in the Winter Olympics, yeah, they kind of became a huge deal after the Olympics. They started the Olympics 2-4 and were in a do-or-die situation, and they performed five straight wins, including two wins over the defending gold medalist Canadian team to win Olympic gold. U.S. women's hockey finally took down their rival Canada. They won their first gold medal since 1998. That was the inaugural games for women's hockey. Canada had won every year since, so a huge accomplishment for the U.S. women there. The United Korean team that participated in the Olympics, I thought was a really cool thing to see. North Korea and South Korea came together and formed one Korean Olympic team in Pyeongchang. Definitely a cool moment there. This is an individual note from the Olympics. Chloe Kim, 18 years old from the United States, a snowboarder, won gold in the women's halfpipe with a nearly perfect score of a 98.25.
Wow.
Incredible performance by an 18-year-old. So definitely some cool Olympic stuff there. Some other individuals to kind of go along with some of the team stuff that you threw out there. Nick Foles. The Eagles were a great story, but Nick Foles is also a great story. Backup to starter, Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. And like you said, to get the Eagles their first Super Bowl is remarkable. The Capitals won their first Stanley Cup. Alex Ovechkin won his first Stanley Cup. He finally got past the Penguins. finally got past the second round, won the Stanley Cup. Like him or not, it's well deserved for Alex Ovechkin. Mookie Betts had a fantastic season for the Boston Red Sox. Gold Glove, Silver Slugger, MVP, World Series, you name it, he won it. Just an incredible individual season for him. And my personal favorite of my individual list is Tiger Woods. He got his first win on the PGA Tour since 2013. He's dealt with so much. Incredible golfer. I just think it was long overdue and great to see him get back in the win column.
Yeah, Tiger Woods was, I think, an overlooked one. I had forgotten to include him on my list. But his comeback this year, good for golf, good for Tiger Woods. People want to see him succeed. His success will lead to golf success. So good to see him come back on. Mookie Betts, remarkable numbers, MVP-type season. Anytime this guy stepped on the field, he did everything right for the Red Sox. Reason why the Red Sox won the World Series, great from him. Unfortunately, as a Penguins fan, it's hard to see Alex Ovechkin hold up the Stanley Cup. As a hockey fan, it's great to see him hold up the Stanley Cup. Finally got past us, one of the best players to play the game, best shooters of this generation. Good to see him finally hoist the cup. I have some college notes, too, here I forgot to include. Alabama continue their dynasty, winning yet again another national championship. We'll talk about this again in a month, but they continued again this year. And Villanova men's basketball actually won their second NCAA tournament in the last 3 years. So good for them. Good for everybody we mentioned. It's hard to imagine the Olympics for this year, though. It feels like it was an eternity that all this stuff happened.
It does feel like it was a long time ago. Yeah.
But yeah, that's 2018 in review.
I got a couple more things for you, Chris. Just a couple games, I guess, that kind of leave an impact. Number 16 seed finally won in March Madness.
That's right, they did.
The University of Maryland, Baltimore County beat Virginia 74-54. I forgot that it was such a lopsided game.
It was a spanking.
20 points for a 16 seed to win for the first time. The Browns finally won a game. Holy cow, the Browns won for the first time since Christmas Eve 2016 over the Jets 21-17. LSU and Texas A&M played a 7-overtime game that A&M won 74-72, highest scoring game ever in college football. And the Rams and Chiefs didn't want to be outdone. Their shootout on Monday Night Football, 54-51. Some incredible moments there from a game perspective, not an individual or a team, but just the entire game. Kind of an incredible year in sports in 2018.
Yeah, lots of good scoring. I still really like the bad stuff you brought up at the beginning, but definitely a lot of highlights. It'll be sad to see 2018 in sports come to a close, but it'll be great to see what 2019 brings. We're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned. We have our quick picks and bold predictions coming up yet, so please stay tuned.
How much time do I have on this?
We got plenty of time. Wait, this song?
Yes.
This song, you got 3 minutes, which should be enough. But yeah, we got plenty of time to talk about. It's perfect that we have a lot of time to talk about the recap of stuff. We have like 14 minutes.
Yeah. Dang.
Holy cow. Yeah, it's okay.
All right, Panthers-Browns, that was a win. Rams and Bears was not. Army won, correct?
Yes.
2-1. Flames did not beat the Wizards. 2-2. Did the Lakers beat the Grizzlies?
Yes.
3-2. Nevada won?
Yes.
4-2. And Gonzaga
lost.
4-3 again. Holy cow.
Yeah, you got enough there to talk about me being consistent. You gotta compile a total record now?
I think it's just 4-3 times 4.
Sixteen and 12, Matt.
No, hold on, I'm making sure that that's it. I feel like I missed a week.
Said you had week 7 already, whereas you needed my week 7.
Yeah. 12-5. 11-28.
11-14.
11-14.
11-7.
11-7.
10-31.
I didn't do Halloween.
You said you had your week 7.
Oh, wait. I guess.
You're the one who has the stats, not me. a lot easier to keep it all digital. For whatever reason, my laptop's on Wi-Fi right now, which is different.
Hmm.
I don't know what got into it.
Now, I missed a week somewhere. Because I have you at 45 and 32, and I have me at 45 and 25. What week did I miss?
I don't know, you got 3 seconds to figure it out.
I might just give myself 4 and 3.
I was going to say, yeah, just do the average.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
All right, get ready.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. Quick picks and bold predictions to wrap up the show and to wrap up the year. Since we are wrapping up 2018, we'll catch you up on where we're at in both quick picks and bold predictions. So we'll start with quick picks. Chris is coming off a 3-4 week and a stretch that has turned out to be very average for him.
That's right.
I'm coming off yet another 4-3 week, which I believe is like 4 in a row. I've also been very average over the course of these last few weeks. Overall, Chris sits at 45 and 32. I'm at 49 and 28. So we're pretty close. Let's see what this week brings. Starting the NFL, the Chargers at the Chiefs in a huge battle for the AFC West. I'm going to go with the LA Chargers. The reason that I like the Chargers is because of the defense. They have the 8th ranked defense in the NFL. The Chiefs have the 30th ranked defense in the NFL. Both of these teams can put up points. Kansas City's taken a hit to their offense with the loss of Kareem Hunt. I'm going to go with the Chargers.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one. The Chargers are a strong team. Both these teams are excellent in the AFC. Can't go wrong choosing either one. We saw the Chiefs kind of have a hiccup last week against the Ravens. They were down in the late in the fourth quarter, required a late field goal, another field goal in overtime, some heroics there on their end to win. But the Chargers, I think, are a team that is built to be able to take on a team like the Chiefs. You mentioned without Kareem Hunt, their offense suffers. I think that's where the Chargers will excel. Melvin Gordon's questionable, so hopefully he's able to play for the Chargers' sake, but I will go with the Chargers. An unfortunate game that we have to pick, but it's an important one, so we will. Also in the AFC, we have New England Patriots. We'll be traveling to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers. I'm going to have to go with the Patriots in this one. The Steelers have just been putting together some shoddy performances left and right, whether it's been the offense, defense, or special teams being inconsistent. I don't think the Steelers are good enough right now. They have all the potential, but they just do not have the actual energy right there on the field right now that we need to see them put forward. The Patriots coming off a tough loss in the end to the Dolphins. I don't think they're going to have another loss back-to-back. I'm going with the Patriots.
I'm going to go with the Steelers just because this is a do-or-die game for them. I mean, not technically. They can lose and still be okay, but Baltimore is right behind them. They're losing ground on everybody that's ahead of them. There's plenty of teams in the wild card that are right behind them. It was a close game last year. I think it's sort of two similar teams. It's in Pittsburgh. If it's in New England, it's a different story. But it's in Pittsburgh. I'm going to take a chance. I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to take a chance and go with the Steelers.
Well, I hope you're right on that regard, though.
Into college football, we're going to spend the rest of our quick picks looking at the bowl season. Number 10, Florida, and number 7, Michigan in the Peach Bowl. I'm going to take Michigan. I just think they've been a more consistent team throughout the year. Their only losses are to two teams that finish in the top 6. I think they have a really good defense, slightly better than Florida's. I'm going to take Michigan.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. Michigan has been a strong team all the way throughout the season. I thought they were going to be able to knock off Ohio State finally and be able to make the college football playoff. They had other intentions. Apparently, their defense was not able to perform in that game. But you mentioned it. They've had two losses to two very strong teams. Florida has been up and down a lot this season. They've had some good wins, had some unfortunate losses. I'm going to go with Michigan. Next up in the Citrus Bowl, we have number 14, Kentucky, facing off against number 12, Penn State. I see a lot of similarities here. It's SEC versus Big Ten. I'm going to go with the Big Ten once again. I'm going to choose Penn State. They've had some, both teams had 3 losses, but Penn State's losses, I feel, are better. All 3 have been 2 ranked opponents. Last game for Trace McSorley, he's definitely going to try to make an impact. Kentucky, they've been a very good year for their standards. Kentucky's not exactly known for football. We've talked about Josh Allen and all of his great defensive awards, but Benny Snell's been good on offense, but I just think Penn State's going to be able to take that one, so I'm going to go with them.
I'm going to go with Penn State as well. Kentucky definitely has the better defense of the two, but Penn State's offense is phenomenal. It's been really good all season. It's going to be an interesting battle, their offense against Kentucky's defense. I'm going to put my faith in Penn State, and I'm going to go with the Nittany Lions. Next one is the Fiesta Bowl, number 11 LSU and number 8 UCF. I have been so against UCF all season, and I'm not going to stop now. I'm taking LSU. I still don't believe in UCF. I still don't think they play anybody. I know they're undefeated. If they win this game, I'll give them some serious credit, especially because they don't have their starting quarterback. But I don't think they're going to win this game. I'm going to go with LSU.
You have been badgering how UCF is not good all season. Here's a loss, here's a loss, here's a loss. Well, Matt, they're still undefeated. I don't see any reason why they will finish the season any otherwise. I am going to choose UCF in this game. I've been a big fan of them. It's unfortunate they did not make the college football playoff. I understand why they didn't, but I still think they're definitely could have been interesting if they would have made it. Going up against LSU, LSU is a team that's come off a very, very difficult loss to Texas A&M. You mentioned it before, going over 70 points. I think UCF has the everybody against us mentality. I think they're going to be able to knock off LSU. Boy, I hope they do for people like you to actually get the recognition.
I will be a believer if they win. I just don't think they will.
It'll be interesting. Next, we have Rose Bowl action, which I think might be the best of the non-college football playoff games. We have number 9, Washington, going up against number 6, Ohio State. I'm going to go with the Buckeyes in this one. I really think Ohio State should have made the college football playoff. I really think they should be number 5 above number 6, but I also think they should have made the college football playoff. Dwayne Haskins has had a phenomenal year. Unfortunate that he did not get the recognition he deserved with how good that Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa did. But I think that Dwayne Haskins has the potential to lead Ohio State to success. Washington has been a team that's been bouncing up and down a lot this season. They end up winning over Washington State late in the season, end up winning their Pac-12 championship game. But I just don't think they have the right components to be able to knock off Ohio State.
I'm going to also go with Ohio State. Ohio State, I talked about Penn State's offense. Well, theirs is great. Ohio State's is better. They have a fantastic offense. They also give up a lot of points. But lucky for them, Washington only scores 26.6 points per game. For that reason, I don't think Washington will be able to capitalize on the weakness that Ohio State has. If this thing turns into a shootout, I like Ohio State. Final college football bowl game that we're going to pick here is the Sugar Bowl. Number 15, Texas. Number 5, Georgia. I'm taking Georgia. This is the biggest disparity in the ranking that we have in any of these bowl games. Georgia's a team that almost made the playoff. I mean, really gave Alabama a run for their money. Had they won that game, they would have been in. They were the first team out. I think the ranking is 5 versus 15 for a reason. I like Georgia.
Yeah, I'm agree with you on this one. Georgia was definitely a team that was a botched fourth down punt fake play against Alabama away from potentially representing the SEC in the college football playoff. They sit at number 5 for a reason. 2 losses on the year, but both were excellent losses if you're going to call a loss good. Texas, on the other hand, has 4 losses. I don't agree with them being in a New Year's 6 bowl if those are supposed to be the 6 best bowl games. I thought a team like Penn State or Kentucky should have gone in ahead of them. But nonetheless, we see Texas in there at number 15. They took a tough defeat to Oklahoma. Georgia is just solid up and down offense, defense. I have a hard time picking against the Bulldogs.
Moving into bold predictions to wrap up the show. So our records are not quite as clear as they are in quick picks just because they are pending, especially if you're Chris and half of your picks are still pending.
That's right.
So I have a record of 7, 20, and 6. So that's 7 correct bold predictions, 20 incorrect, 6 still pending. Chris has only gotten 4 right. He's also only missed 13. If you can do the math real quick there, that means he has 16 that are still pending. Chris, what are you doing?
Might be some more clarity come next year. A lot of them were season-end goals. Well, no, a lot of them were NFL end-of-the-season goals. So by the time we come back, I'll probably have a lot more wrong there. But, you know, fingers crossed there's some more right. I do want to point out there's 4 I have right. 2 came in the same week, so.
Which means you've been consistently bad with the exception of that one week.
Or consistently pending, one of the 2.
Yeah, a little bit of both. Anyway, let's move on to this week's bowl predictions. Let's start with the college football playoff. We said that we would give some predictions. It's what we thought would happen. Well, here they are. Alabama and Oklahoma, I think we're both going to agree on this. I'm going to take Oklahoma. Notre Dame and Clemson, I'm going.
You said Oklahoma.
I did not mean Oklahoma. I'm in Alabama. Definitely Alabama. Notre Dame and Clemson, I'm going to take Notre Dame. I think it's going to be a really good game. Battle of the undefeated, but I'm going to take Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Alabama. Thought about this for a long time. Alabama's the easy pick, so I'm not going to make it. It's bold predictions for a reason, so I'm going to take Notre Dame over Alabama.
Okay, I have a little bit of similarity there in my bracket. So I have Alabama easily over Oklahoma. Shouldn't be that much of a contest. Clemson, I have defeating Notre Dame. Clemson, I mentioned, has pretty much just the better team in every regard to Notre Dame. And in the final, it's another rematch of Alabama-Clemson. We've seen it year in and year out. Seems to be the only two teams that can really muster up the potential to make the final. But I will take Alabama. Yes, they're the easy pick, but they're also the right pick. They have been undefeated this whole season for a reason. I don't see any reason why they won't be undefeated. So I will pick Alabama to win the college football playoff. My next bold prediction is actually going to tail off of that. We've talked about how good Tua has been. I think that Jalen Hurts, the backup quarterback for Alabama, he's going to make an appearance in the college football playoff. I'm not going to specify how, whether it's an injury or a benching. I just think that he's going to manifest himself into the game somehow.
So I'm going to go to the NHL for my next one. I think when we return, Tampa Bay will still be at the top. I think they can hold that position the whole way through, just with how well they're playing right now, individually and as a team. But I'm also going to say along with that, that St. Louis will be dead last when we get back. Currently, they're sitting at 28th in the NHL. They only have 26 points to show for the season so far. There was a video surfaced from last week of two Blues teammates fighting each other in practice. If there's not I couldn't come up with any better sign the team is trending in the absolute worst direction possible, fighting each other in practice. That's going to catch up with them if it hasn't already. I think they'll be in last. Tampa Bay will be in first.
I like it. Yeah, Tampa Bay definitely a strong team. St. Louis definitely a team that, what are you doing, St. Louis? Come on, get your act together. My last bold prediction will move into MLB. We've not talked about them that much this show, but Bryce Harper, biggest name in free agency. A lot of people wondering where he's going to go. I'm going to say that Bryce Harper is going to sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I've seen reports that they're trying to move Yasiel Puig to the Reds, frees up not only cap space for the Dodgers, but also the right field spot which Harper plays in. We've seen the Yankees are out of the running, Red Sox probably out of the running, Phillies sign Andrew McCutchen. I think the Dodgers are a good lock for Bryce Harper, so I'm going to go with that.
Very interesting. My last bold prediction is going to be in the NFL. By the time we return, the regular season will be over, the wild card round will be over, and the divisional round will be over. We'll be looking forward to the championship weekend. So I'm going to call the four teams that I think will be there. I'm going to start in the AFC, and I'm going to take the Chiefs and the Patriots. I think it's going to be hard for those teams to not finish 1-2, and they both play really, really well at home. They've both got great offenses week in and week out, so I'm going to take those two in the AFC to play in the championship game. The NFC is tougher for me. I'm going to go with the Saints and the Rams, and I really want to put the Bears in there instead just because of their defense, because I think defense is going to have a big impact. But I don't know. It seems to be the year of the offenses, and what better teams to have play in the NFC Championship game than the Saints and the Rams with those two offenses. So I'm going to say Chiefs, Patriots, Saints, and Rams will be playing when we get back for a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
All right, I can see some of those teams. Don't know that all four will be there, but definitely interesting to see.
That wraps up this show for us, and that wraps up 2018 for us. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back in 2019, early January. Have a great holiday season. Thanks for listening.
Bye!